have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Forget the first joke you played on the studio. What a rib that was.
First joke I played on Paramount? What was that?
When you got them to sign you up as an actor.
Oh, yes, very funny. Good old Paramount. You were there then, too, huh?
Yes, I was.
Then you left, didn't you? And I stayed on.
Yes. Well, you never cared about success.
No, I
didn't. Well, but we did have a lot of fun at Paramount.
Oh, yeah. You remember the day you caught Bob Hope trying to peek through the keyhole of your dressing room?
Yes, and you were standing on his shoulder looking through the tantrum. Well, anyway, we did have a lot of fun at Paramount.
What kicks.
I suppose things there changed a lot.
Oh, yes. You know, Hope has your old dressing room now.
He finally got in there, huh? Well, it's awful nice to be reminiscing with you like this. Test your memory, dearie.
We're off.
Do you remember when you sang with the Whiteman Band?
Oh, gee, wasn't the music grand? I was such a handsome young singer.
Yes, but look at you now.
Oh, I ain't no pinza.
Dearie, say, would you tell me something? How did your movie career begin?
I was standing in for Rin Tin Tin. Dearie, life was dreary in those movie days gone by.
I don't remember.
Well, I remember.
Well, dearie, you're much older than I.
Dearie, remember going dancing? The coconut grove was heavenly.
Your golf shoes were killing me.
On the road, we parked in the moonlight.
While I changed a flat tire.
I put on the hubcap, dearie. Then we ran out of gas.
But I couldn't pay for that. The restaurant check had left me flat.
Mary, you were contrary. When I kissed you in the car.
Do you remember?
Oh, do I remember? My dearie, I'm still wearing the scar.
Tell me, dearie.
Listen.
How television has progressed since the pioneers.
Oh, Hope will send it back 20 years.
In those days before Howdy Doody. Why, Milton Berle was just a child.
Much too young to steal, oh dearie. You remember when the folks paid to see a show?
Today it's free on video.
Oh dearie, life was cheery in those days before TV.
Say, aren't you worried?
No, I'm not worried.
Well, dearie, you're a much richer than me.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Hope you're all having a fantastic weekend. Tonight, boy, do we have two great mysteries for you. We begin with one from a guy who lived to be the age of 39, and then he continued on for many more years, but he still stayed 39. I'm talking about the wonderful comedian Jack Benny. We actually played an episode of Jack Benny once, and a man walked up to him on the radio and said, "Your money or your life?" And Benny was completely silent. And then the man said, "Your money or your life?" And Benny replied, I'm thinking. Well, anyway, tonight you get to listen to him in a dramatic role. And then we're going to listen to another radio program from Suspense called Three Blind Mice. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at RadioMasterpieces.com. I'll be sure and get back to you. Again, just have a fantastic weekend. Thanks so much for tuning in. And now let's enjoy our programs.
And now with Murder in G-flat and the transcribed performance of Mr. Jack Benny, hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
A lieutenant in here, sir, in the rec hall.
What's he doing in the rec hall?
Well, he thought he'd tune the piano while I was waiting, Lieutenant.
Sunday night. Why couldn't you guys pick a better night than Sunday night? My one day off, and I have to come down.
Sorry, we had to call you, Joe.
This is the guy, huh?
Yeah. Hey, you.
That's it. C flat. If I had my wrench.
This is the lieutenant.
Oh. Oh, I'm sorry, Lieutenant. Oh. My name is Remington. Hercules Remington.
That's it, Joe. We checked.
Huh. Pardon me, Lieutenant, but my wife, Martha, is going to be awfully worried. You see, I haven't seen her since this morning. They told me...
You haven't seen your wife since this morning?
No, and I thought that if I could phone her and at least tell her where I am...
Where'd you pick him up?
Coney Island, Joe. He called us from there.
Yes, and I should have called my wife, too. Look, Lieutenant, I don't want to seem persistent about this.
You'll have plenty of time later to call your wife. Now, give the lieutenant the story in detail, just like you told it to me on the way down here to the station.
What kind of work do you do, Remington?
Well, I'm a piano tuner, Lieutenant. Yours is out of tune. C-flat, Lieutenant. See, if I could get my bag, I'd tune...
Look, Remington, I haven't got all night. Now, either get on with your story or I'll have...
All right, Lieutenant. But I really would like to call my wife first.
Start your story.
All right. But if there's any explaining to be done to my wife, you guys will have to do it.
We'll be happy to. Now, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Well, Lieutenant... This whole mess started yesterday morning, Saturday. I got up, had breakfast with my wife, Martha, and my Uncle Herman. He's my black sheep uncle of the family. He's a carnival man, came to work at the World's Fair here, and has been living with us ever since. I think he ought to pay at least one-third of the rent, but Martha, well, she feels sorry for him. Anyway, I left the house around 10 o'clock on my way to the Lippin Ridge School of Music. I usually tune their pianos on the first Saturday of the month. You see, because there aren't any classes there on that Saturday. I catch the BMT at 57th and get off at Union Square. Well, yesterday morning I got on the subway, just like I always do. I carry a little ordinary brown bag with all my tools in it and usually lay it right next to me under the seat. I was just sitting there, thinking hard, wondering how I was going to meet the bills at the end of the month, when a man sat down next to me. He shoved something under the seat and just sat there staring ahead. B-flat, 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 B-flat.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I got carried away for a moment. Four stops later, the man got up, reached under the seat, pulled out a little brown bag, and started for the door. I remember noticing he was bald-headed and wearing big black horn-rimmed glasses. For a minute, I thought he'd stolen my bag of tools, but I reached my hand under the seat and found my bag was still there. I remember sort of chuckling to myself, thinking of the coincidence that he'd been carrying the same type of bag. Well, anyway, I got off at Union Square and walked up to the Lippin Ridge School of Music on 14th. There are four floors there, you know, a piano on each floor. And I usually start at the top and work my way down. Well, since the school doesn't have any classes on Saturday, the place was deserted. That one's sour. Yeah, D flat. I'll soon have that in shape. What the... I zipped open my bag to take out my tuning hammer and my wedges, but there were no tools in my bag. The tools were gone, and in their place were bundles and bundles of crisp $10 bills. And then it hit me. The little bald-headed man on the subway. The man who sat down next to me. This bag belonged to him. He picked up mine by mistake. There was no name on the bag, no identification of any kind. I started counting one of the bundles. Each bundle contained $1,000 in $10 bills, and there were 25 bundles. I had just come heir to $25,000. When I got home, Martha was washing some clothes out on the back porch, and Uncle Herman was rolling pennies for his pitch penny concession. I called both of them into the living room, pulled all the shades down, closed and locked all the doors, and set the bag on the table.
Hercules, what are you doing back home so soon?
What kind of nonsense is this, nephew?
Martha, Uncle Herman.
You look awful pale.
I guess I do.
Hercules, what's the matter with you?
Listen to me, both of you. I'm rich.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Hercules, at your age.
I'm not lying to you.
Look, I gotta get out.
You must be sick.
Look, will both of you be quiet for just a minute?
Sounds like he's drunk.
Are you sick, Hercules?
Look, I'm not sick and I'm not drunk. I've got it right here.
You've got what?
Look.
Wow.
Hercules.
Now do you believe me? Now do you believe I'm not sick or drunk? Look at it.
$25,000. $25,000? That's a lot of money.
Hercules, where'd you get all this money?
I found it.
Found it?
Found it?
Yes.
Listen to me, Hercules Remington. Don't you lie to me. Where'd you get all that money?
I told you, Martha. I found it.
I haven't lived with you for 10 years for nothing. I know when you're lying to me. Now tell me, where'd you get all this money?
Okay, if I tell you the truth, I know you won't believe
me. Well, tell me anyway.
Well, all right. Look, this morning I got on the subway, just like I always do. And some little bald-headed man with black horn-rimmed glasses sat down next to me. When he got up to get off the subway, I noticed he was carrying a brown bag, just like mine. At first I thought it was mine. But mine was still under the seat. Anyway, when I got to the music school, I opened my bag and all this money was in it.
Mm. Sounds fantastic.
Hercules.
But it's the truth. The little man picked up my bag by mistake. I searched this one for some identification, but there isn't any.
Then you mean the little bald-headed man has your bag with the tools in it?
I guess he does.
It seems odd that anyone would be carrying this much money around in a little brown bag.
Odd or not, the fact still remains that I didn't steal it.
Well, I guess there isn't any way that you could get a hold of this man, so we'll just have to turn the money over to the police.
The police?
Yes, I said the police.
But why?
Why? Good heavens, Hercules, you don't expect to keep this money.
Why not?
But it isn't ours.
Why? Why isn't it ours? I found it. I didn't steal it, Martha.
Hercules!
Martha, don't you see? Maybe this is fate. Maybe we were meant to have this money. Maybe if
you're crazy. You're out of your head. You're talking like a madman, and I won't have it.
But Martha...
But you didn't come by this money, honestly. It isn't legally yours.
Now, wait a minute, Martha. Maybe Hercules is
Now, you stay out of this, Uncle Herman. Hercules, you're going to take this money to the police.
No. No, I'm not. I'm not going to take this to the police or anyone else. Do you understand me? I'm not going to take this money to the police.
Hercules, I don't understand you at all. But mark my words, you'll pay for this.
Well,
don't pay no attention to her, nephew.
But why does she have to be that way? Why can't she understand me just this once? Why can't she see my side of it? I didn't steal this money.
No, you didn't, nephew.
And I'm going to keep it.
Sure you are, nephew. Sure you are. You're going to keep it.
You bet I am. The next morning, that was this morning, Sunday, Martha wouldn't speak to me at all. Her eyes were all red and puffed up. I could see that she'd been crying. And Uncle Herman wasn't doing much talking either. Martha just kept sniffling as she puttered around the stove. Martha, my peach isn't peeled.
Peel it yourself.
But I...
Here, I'll peel it for you, nephew.
Thanks, Uncle Herman.
Martha, please, won't
you
try...
Don't you talk to me.
Now, don't be too hard on him, Martha. After all, a man's got a right...
I told you once, Uncle Herman, you stay out of this. It's none of your business.
Sorry. She's plenty mad. Well, ain't you going to answer the phone? Hello?
Mr. Remington?
Yes?
Hercules Remington?
Yes, who is this, please?
I want to return your bag of piano tools to you, Mr. Remington.
I believe
there was a slight mix-up. I believe in my haste I picked up your bag instead.
But how did you find me? I mean...
Oh, it was quite simple. There's only one piano tuner with the initials HR in New York City.
Well, what do you know?
You do want your piano tools back, don't you, Mr. Remington?
Listen to me.
I don't think you'd like the idea of not being able to tune any more piano.
What?
And I'd like to have my bag returned.
Of course.
As soon as possible.
Yes.
Tonight.
Tonight?
At 9:30 tonight. Meet me at Madison Square Garden.
Madison Square Garden?
At 9:30, at the 49th Street entrance. The door on the far end will be left slightly open. And please be prompt, Mr. Remington, with my brown bag. You see, it will displease my business partner considerably if he finds I've lost the bag.
Well, all right. The 49th Street entrance, the door on the far end.
Hercules, what's wrong? Well, you're as white as a ghost.
I am?
You sure are.
I guess I should be. That was the little bald-headed man with horn-rimmed glasses, Uncle Herman. I've just lost $25,000. Uncle Herman went in the living room to read the Sunday paper. I went in the bedroom to tell Martha about the phone call. But she wasn't there. In fact, she wasn't anywhere in the house. She was gone, and I figured that she'd probably gone over to her sister's house. I was so nervous the rest of the afternoon, I couldn't eat a thing. I left the house for Madison Square Garden about 9 o'clock. From riches to rags in about 24 hours. And I was back riding the subway. I walked up 8th Avenue to the garden. I turned and walked up 49th Street to the entrance and stopped. Sure enough, one of the doors on the far end was open a little, just as the little man had told me it would be. I slipped in through the open door. It was pitch black. I couldn't see a thing.
Hello? Hello? Anybody here? Hello? Is there anyone here?
What the... I stumbled over something and almost fell. I struck a match and looked down at a body. The body of the little man in horn-rimmed glasses. His head was all covered with blood. I started to blow out the match, and then something caught my eye. Lying next to his body was my brown bag with the initials HR. And next to the bag, covered with blood, was my tuning hammer. Please, Lieutenant, may I call my wife? I want to...
Finish your story first, Mr. Remington. You can call her after that.
Oh, all right.
Now, you were standing over the body of this man in Madison Square Garden. You found your tuning hammer next to the body.
Yes, my tuning hammer. Let me tell you, Lieutenant, I was scared. Plenty scared. There I was standing over a dead man in Madison Square Garden. And clutched in my hand was his brown bag containing $25,000. Who would kill him? But I couldn't stop to think about that now. I had to get out of there and fast and take my bag and hammer lying on the floor with me. I started to reach for my bag when a sound, G-flat. Someone had opened up a knife. Whoever was coming toward me, I blew out the match and waited. Who was in that corridor with me?
Was it the business partner of the little man? Was it... I started to move backwards, and then a big black figure loomed up at me. With all my strength, I brought the brown bag swinging up from the floor. I ran until I thought my legs were gone. My mind was all fogged up now. I couldn't think straight. Who was the guy who just tried to kill me? One thing I knew for sure, I had to get rid of this money until I could think things out. But where? Where could I get rid of it? I neared the corner of 59th and 8th Avenue and then saw it. A bus terminal. Why not? A public locker in the bus station. I opened the door and walked in.
Scranton, Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia leaving in 10 minutes.
Yes, ma'am, in about 20 minutes.
Excuse me, mister. I'd like to have a key for a locker.
Just a second.
G sharp.
What'd you say?
Hmm? Oh, nothing.
What do you know? Haven't got an empty one right now. Have to wait a little while.
You mean out of all of these hundreds of lockers, you haven't got one empty?
Well, I'm sorry, mister, but you can see for yourself. A lot of servicemen in town over the weekend.
Well, how long will it be?
10, 15 minutes. Maybe a couple hours.
Okay, I'll wait. I'll sit over there. I bought a paper at the newsstand and sat down on one of the benches. I didn't even know what I was reading. I just kept... And then I saw it. On page 2. A complete account of a robbery that had occurred on Friday night at one of the downtown post offices. 2 bandits had escaped with $25,000 in $10 bills. This was it. It must have been. But would the police believe a story like that? Of course they wouldn't. I had the money, and it was my tuning hammer there, lying next to the body in the garden. I got out of that bus terminal in a hurry and walked up 8th Avenue. Where could I go? The only place I could think of was Coney Island. Coney Island and Uncle Herman and his pitchpenny concession. It was late, and the island amusement park was almost deserted. It was cold and close to 11. Uncle Herman was leaning against the side of his concession as I walked up.
Why, nephew?
What are you doing out this way?
Uncle Herman, quick, let's go in back.
All right. There ain't no customers anyway. Yeah. Now, what happened, Hercules? Did you give the money back to the man?
I went to meet him at the garden, just like he told me. But when I got there and I found him, he was dead.
Dead?
He'd been... beat over the head with my tuning hammer.
Why, Hercules.
I was just about to grab my hammer and bag and get out of there when someone made a lunge at me in the dark. But I got away. I went to a bus terminal to put the money in a locker. I had to wait. And then I read that the money is stolen post office money.
Oh, you got yourself in a mess, nephew.
I'm frantic. I don't know what to do. That's why I came here.
Well, I'm glad you did, nephew. Glad you did.
But what am I going
to
do?
Best thing would be to go back and get that hammer and bag. Leave the money here. I'll hide it for you.
But maybe I ought to go to the police.
You can't go to the police with that story. They'd never believe you, Hercules.
I know,
Bring your bag and come with me, nephew. I got a hiding place for that money that no one will ever find.
Uncle Herman locked his place up, and then he led me over to the funhouse. It was closed now, and the place was all dark. But Uncle Herman had a key. He led me up some stairs to a high ramp that people climb on, you know, to slide down the big chute. He stopped at one of them.
Here, nephew. Right under this top chute, we'll just pry one of the boards loose a little and slip the bag with the money underneath. No one in the world will ever look for it. There we are. Now, give me the bag, nephew.
Here you are, Uncle Herman. Are you sure that no one will find it here?
Absolutely, nephew. You and I are the only ones who know where it is.
Well,
there's nothing to be afraid of. Now, hand me the bag.
Here you are.
That's it. Now, let's just check to make sure that...
What's the matter, Uncle Herman?
Where's the money, nephew?
The money? What are you talking about? It's in the...
Is this what you call money? Or this bag's got nothing in it but bundles of torn newspaper?
I don't understand.
Hercules, dear nephew, what did you do with the money?
I don't know. It was in there. You saw it yourself when I brought it
this
home.
This a scheme of yours, Hercules?
Scheme?
Trying to cheat on your dear old uncle, aren't you, Hercules?
Uncle Harmon, what are you talking about?
Where's the money, Hercules?
G-flat. That knife. G-flat.
This ain't no time to play games with your Uncle Herman, Hercules.
Uncle Herman, where were you tonight?
What's that, Hercules?
G-flat, your knife. It's G-flat.
Looks like this thing has got you going, Hercules.
It was you in the garden, wasn't it, Uncle Herman? You killed him.
Let's not waste any more time, nephew. Now tell me where that money is.
I don't know.
Stop lying to your dear uncle, Hercules.
I'm not lying.
I usually use this knife to scale fish. The smell of fish is stronger than the smell of blood.
But I tell you, I don't know where that money is.
You're lying to me. You came down here just to throw me off, didn't you? Make me think you lost the money.
Uncle Herman, stay away from me.
All right, Hercules. So you won't tell your dear uncle.
He rushed at me with the knife. I stepped back, tripped over the board he had pried loose, and fell down. But Uncle Herman... He went hurtling over me, head over heels down the long slide. And I got back down at the bottom of the slide chute. He was dead.
The uncle had his neck broken, Lieutenant.
Yeah. What about the money?
Well, Mr. Remington's wife turned it over to the authorities this morning about 11 o'clock. She said the money wasn't his and she didn't want him carrying it around.
Well, I guess that'll be all, Mr. Remington. You can go now.
But isn't it dangerous? I mean, the partner is still...
We picked up his business partner a few hours after the robbery.
Oh.
But just in case you happen to come across another $25,000 that doesn't belong to you, promise me that you'll get in touch with the authorities, will you, Mr. Remington?
Oh, I've learned my lesson, Lieutenant. Believe you me, I have.
Yeah, good.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, I almost forgot. I gotta call my wife. She's probably frantic by now.
There's a payphone right outside in the corridor.
Payphone?
Yeah, right around the corner. You can't miss it.
Hmm. Well, she's waited this long. I think I'll just tell her when I get home.
You go through life and never know the day when fate may bring
a situation that will prove to be embarrassing. Your face gets red, you hide your head and wish that you could die.
But that's old-fashioned, here's the thing that you should really try.
Say, how do you do? And shake hands, shake hands, shake hands. How do you do? And shake hands, state your name and business.
Miss Wyman, please, you're up.
Janie, it is.
You introduce your girlfriend to your very special beau,
uh-huh.
And then he doesn't call you, and the next thing that you know, you see them both a-walking down the street as big as life.
Where?
And when he says, my dear, I'd like to have you meet my wife, say, how do you do, and shake hands, shake hands,
it's
shake
a...
hands. How do you do, and shake hands,
what's the
take
damn?
Your name and business.
What's your language? Ouch! You go into a barber shop to get yourself a shave.
Well, what else do
and
you
if
get?
You are the kind of guy who never can behave.
Oh, never, never,
you
never.
Ask the manicurist for a little kiss or two. And then when you discover it's her husband shaving you.
Say, how do you do? We shake hands, we shake hands, shake hands. Say, how do you do? We shake hands, state your name and business.
Next time, I just get a shoe shine.
Well, move over. We're at the wedding of some folks you hardly know by sight. And in a conversation with a lady on your right,
Umbria.
You say you think the bride's a mess, her face she ought to hide. And when you find you're talking to the mother of the bride, say,
how do you do? You shake
what happened to the whiskey?
Shake hands,
how do you run away with the whiskey?
State your name and business.
I'm getting thirsty. Where's the whiskey?
Give me, lad.
You're speeding down the highway and you're feeling the suburbs.
Suburb.
You hear a siren and pull over to the curb.
To the curb.
And when a cop who's big and tough comes walking up to you.
To you.
And ask you where the fire is that you are going to.
Say, how do you do? Say, how do you do? State your name and business.
Groucho.
while walking through a cemetery very late at night. You find that you're confronted by a figure dressed in white.
And though the blood inside your veins has quickly turned to ice,
but everything will be okay if you take my advice. Say,
How do you do? You're listening to Valley 104.9 FM.
Suspense. Tonight he's bringing Mr. Van Heflin in Three Blind Mice.
Lockwood, Bentley, and Walsh Publishing. It still said it on the big brass nameplate.
Going down. Oh, good evening, Mr. Lockwood.
Good evening. Sure, the elevator operators were nice to me. Most of the office boys remembered to knock on my door before they came in. And even some of the stenographers still spoke to me. But everybody else above the rank of junior story reader knew it was just a question of time before that big brass nameplate in the lobby came down and another one went up in its place. Bentley and Walsh Publishing. No more Lockwood. If ever a man hated his partners, I did.
Main floor, sir.
Well, I went out of the building and across the street to the Savoy for dinner. Even the head waiter must have heard the rumor. He gave me the dime-sized table over in the corner that's generally reserved for out-of-town ribbon clerks. It's all right, Bob. There'll be another day. I'd gotten to coffee and dessert when I saw Helen Conover. Well, that just about summed it up. There were two things that I wanted in this world: to get my hands back on that corporation and Helen Conover. Well, she saw me and I waved to her, and she waved back and started over to my table. She was head of our promotion department. She was smart and ambitious, and she could have personally modeled for any pin-up art that you ever saw, but she was reserving anything along that line for my partner, Dick Walsh. Okay, sister, there'll be another day.
Hello, Arthur. Dining alone?
Yes, yeah, it's a habit, but I could break it under the right conditions.
Oh, but you're all finished.
That's all right, sit down. Just a big book publisher, got nothing to do.
Well, if it's not against office regulations to have dinner with the boss.
Regulations? Well, they never bothered you now, did they?
Now, Arthur, let's keep this clean.
Does Madame wish to order?
Yes, the steak dinner, please. No soup and no potatoes.
Very good, madam.
Working kind of late, aren't you?
Not working. Dick wanted me to see him off on the train.
Train? Where's he going?
Chicago.
What for?
Business, I suppose. Didn't he tell you?
You know, they never tell me anything anymore.
Well, it wasn't anything very important, I guess.
Well, I'd know even less if it had been. Maybe you can tell me about Sam.
About Sam?
Did he get his report from the doctor?
Oh, yes. He did, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, how is it?
I'm afraid it's pretty bad.
How bad?
Well, it's his heart, all right. They don't give him much more time.
Uh-huh.
6 months at the most.
Well, that means they'll have to work fast. Or I will.
What?
Wouldn't you say so?
Arthur, I don't understand you. I've just told you that one of your partners has only 6 months to live, and you don't even seem to care.
Now, look, let's be grown up about it, at least. Sam Bentley and Dick Walsh have been trying to ease me out of the firm for the last year. Now Sam's going to kick off. Why should I care?
You really hate him, don't you?
Me? I don't hate anybody. I just hope he kicks off tonight instead of waiting 6 months and the Dick Walsh's train runs into the Hudson River, that's all. I don't hate anybody. I just wish they were dead.
Oh, Arthur, how can you?
What's the matter with that? I wish my partners were out of the way, and you wish... Well, I know what you wish, too, only I'm honest about it, and you're not.
This isn't a very pleasant conversation.
There's always a better one. For instance, what are you doing tonight?
I'm going home and get a good night's sleep for a change.
Oh, by the way, how long is Dick going to be away?
About a week.
You'll be kind of lonely, won't you?
I don't see why I should.
Well, that's what I was thinking. You know, I've always had a sort of a yen for you, Helen.
Why, Mr. Lockwood. Why don't people tell me these things? Well,
people don't have to tell people like you those things.
Now that you mention it, I do seem to have noticed a sort of a leer ever so often.
That wasn't any leer, baby. That was the real McCoy.
Look, Arthur, this may sound kind of corny, but I'm in love with Dick, and he's in love with me.
It does.
What?
Sound corny. Why doesn't he marry you?
You know why?
Sure, that wife that won't divorce him. You know, he's been using that one for the last 10 years.
Please, Arthur, I'd rather not talk about it.
Okay, okay. Not to change the subject, but, what do you expect to get out of it?
Get out of what?
The reorganization, the big day when they kick old Arthur out of the firm. You think maybe they'll make you a vice president?
I really don't know what you're talking about, Arthur.
Well, you ought to think about it. Because you can never tell, I might be able to make you an even better proposition.
I'm afraid I'm not interested in your propositions, Arthur. Any of them.
Okay, baby. There'll be another day. It was mostly bluff, and she knew it. But there was one thing that she didn't know. There was a chance that my smart partners had actually been holding out on me, and if they had, the way our incorporation papers were drawn, then I could really nail them. Well, I'd been snooping through the files at night lately, and I'd already dug up a couple of things, and this night I went back at it again. I let myself in through the side door of the building and walked up the two flights to the office. Everything was dark and deserted. You could barely make out the long lines of desks. And then I saw the light under Sam's door. Well, I crossed the office very quietly and listened. Nothing. I tapped on the door. Still nothing. So I opened it. And there was Sam. There was Sam, leaning back in his chair and staring at me with those cold and slightly protruding blue eyes, much the way he always did. Except, tonight, there was a small hole in the right side of his head. And Sam Bentley was dead. The gun was lying on the carpet where it had fallen out of his hand. It was his, all right, I recognized it. His other hand had fallen against an open drawer of the desk, and his wristwatch was broken. It had stopped at 8:05, and I picked up the phone to call the police. And then
Number,
I noticed
please.
A letter on his desk. It was addressed to Richard Walsh. Well, I put up the
Number,
phone
please.
And looked at that letter. And then I opened it. Well, it was about what I'd figured, the doctor's report on his heart, the usual all-around apology, and then a detailed explanation of how Dick Walsh could use the corporate insurance to pay off Sam's family for his share of the business and then take it over himself because Sam didn't want me to have any part of it. The signature was a little scrawly, but it was Sam's all right. So there it was, the double cross. And yet, it's funny, but almost before I got through reading it, I knew the answer. I looked at that broken wristwatch of his again. 8:05, it said. An hour later, I was home in bed, sleeping like a baby, knowing that Dick Walsh, too, was going to die. I strolled into the office the next morning about 10, just to be on the safe side, but of course they'd already found him. All over the office, there were little huddles that broke up furtively at my approach. Well, I played it for what it was worth and headed for the largest and most important huddle, the executive huddle outside of Sam's door. They were all there, including Helen Conover. And she was looking pretty sick. Well, what is all
just
this?
Just a minute. Who are you?
Oh, I'm Arthur Lockwood, officer. What's all this about?
Oh, just wait here, please, Mr. Lockwood.
Hey, what's going on here anyway? Somebody robbed the till?
Arthur.
What?
Arthur, it's Sam.
What? His heart?
No. He was shot.
Shot?
Arthur, the police say it's murder.
Will you come in, please, Mr. Lockwood?
Yes, certainly.
The captain would like to see you again, too, please, Miss Conover.
Oh, yes, all right.
Well, we went in. Sam was still there. But by this time, somebody had thrown a towel over his face. A big, gangling guy came across the room toward me with his hand out.
Miss Lockwood?
Yes?
Captain Gibbons, homicide.
Is that Sam Bentley?
Yes. No, it must be something of a shock to you, sir, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you a few questions.
Oh, yes, of course. Please go right ahead.
Know anybody to want to kill your partner, Mr. Lockwood?
Are you sure it was... I mean, couldn't it have been suicide?
Why would he want to kill himself?
Well, he's been pretty depressed lately. His health has been bad. Only yesterday he got a report from his doctor that he probably wouldn't live more than 6 months.
No, won't hold, Mr. Lockwood. Not unless you figure that Bentley shot himself and then carried the gun into your other partner's office. That's Mr. Walsh, isn't it?
Mr. Walsh?
Yes. Was that surprising?
Why, Yes, it...
Do you mean that you found the gun in Mr. Walsh's office?
In the wall safe. How many people have the combination of that safe, Mr. Lockwood?
Why, just the three of us, I think. The three partners. We each have a safe, but somebody else has to have the combination, too, just in case... well, you know...
Mm-hmm. Did you trust your partners, Mr. Lockwood?
Well, Captain, I'll be frank with you. There hasn't been a great deal of love lost between us lately, but... yes, we trusted each other in our own way.
Where were you at 7:10, Mr. Lockwood?
Oh, I was having dinner at the Savoy across the street.
You can prove that, I suppose?
Yes, of course. As a matter of fact, Miss Conover here came over later and joined me.
Mm-hmm. I understand Miss Conover was seeing your other partner, Mr. Walsh, off on the 7:35 for Chicago.
So she told me, yes.
Mm-hmm. You're sure of the train time?
Yes, of course.
Well, it's the one Dick Walsh always takes to Chicago. Well, why this interest in time? Have you set the time of when it happened?
Bentley's watch was broken. It stopped at 7:10.
Oh.
Either of you see this before?
Where did that come from?
Recognize it?
Yes, of course. That's Mr. Walsh's watch charm.
He keeps losing it. He loses it all the time.
Yeah, yes, he does. We found it in the chair behind Bentley's body.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Captain. You don't seriously mean to suggest that...
How does it add up to you?
Well, I mean that watch charm doesn't mean anything. It's true that he did lose it all the time, but he could have lost it in here any time.
Not in a chair, Mr. Lockwood. It wouldn't stay there very long, not without being found.
Oh, Captain, there must be some mistake. There must be.
You can go now, Miss Conover.
But please.
I said you could go now, Miss Conover.
Come on, Helen.
I guess that's it, Harry.
I guess it is.
Better call Chicago and issue a warrant.
Oh.
Richard Leonard Walsh. Suspicion of murder.
No, it's...
All right. It's nothing now. She's just fainted.
The defendant will rise and face the court. Does the defendant wish to make a statement before sentence is passed? If not, we will proceed. Richard Leonard Walsh, having been tried and found guilty of the murder of Samuel Bentley in the first degree, you are hereby remanded to the custody of the warden of the state penitentiary, where at such time as the state shall deem appropriate, you will be executed in the manner prescribed by law.
It's a nice, easy way of getting along in the publishing business. If you're lucky, one of your partners commits suicide. You rig the evidence to frame the other partner for his murder. Net result, a new firm, Arthur Lockwood Incorporated. Arthur Lockwood being me. Of course, there were the usual appeals and the thing dragged on, but that didn't worry me. I had other things to think about. And number one on that list was Helen Conover. But there, I'll admit, I was surprised because Dick knew that he'd been framed and must have suspected me, and Helen was supposed to be in love with Dick. Well, I played it very carefully. The paternal approach, the sorrowing friend, dinner in the theater and stuff like that. But never a word, never a wrong word or gesture. And then one night, about a week before Dick Walsh was scheduled to be executed, I just brought Helen home from a sedate little tour of some of our most upper-crust hot boxes, and we were at her apartment.
It's a swell evening, Arthur. You've been awfully sweet to me.
Well, it's the least I can do, Helen.
No, you mustn't feel that way, Arthur.
What way?
That you sort of owe me something.
Owe you something? Well, why should I? It's just that I know how you feel.
I wonder if you do.
Well, yes, I think so. You've been awfully brave about it, but I think I know.
Arthur, once you said that something I said was corny. Remember?
Yes, I remember.
Well, it was. It wasn't even true.
You weren't in love with him?
Afraid I'm a pretty heartless little girl, Arthur. I'm afraid I love myself too much to be really in love with anybody.
Well, that's not heartless, that's just honest.
You know that he's to be executed next week, don't you?
Yes.
Well, then he's not much good to me now, is he? Even if he did want to marry me.
Oh.
Now you know I'm heartless and cold-blooded and cruel.
I ought to, but I don't.
No, I don't have to be that way. I can be other ways.
What other ways?
Like this.
Helen. that was that. I didn't care about anything after that, even marriage. We made a quick trip down to Virginia where names in the publishing business wouldn't mean a thing, even ours. And it was all very quiet. No publicity, no fuss, nothing. When we got back, we took a little place in the East 50s, although, of course, she kept her apartment, I kept mine. It had to be that way for a while, at least until after Dick's execution and the things had cooled down a bit. Well, I knocked off early at the office that day, for the looks of the thing, and Helen was already home when I got there.
Oh, you're home early, aren't you, darling? Any particular reason?
No particular reason.
Penny for your thoughts, darling.
My thoughts? Oh, nothing special, Yes, I was just thinking, I don't know.
Bet I know.
What?
You were thinking about Dick. He's going to die tonight.
Well, maybe I was, I don't know.
Well, I'm glad you did come home anyway, darling, because I wanted to have a little talk with you.
Sure, about what?
You really shouldn't let it bother you, you know.
Let what bother me?
The execution.
Why should it bother me? He killed a man, didn't he? Why should I worry about what the law does to him?
Are you so sure, Arthur?
So sure of what?
So sure that he did kill a man?
Well, right then it hit me that all the time I'd been thinking how slick everything was, something was wrong, terribly wrong. That all this time she'd been playing with me like a smart young cat with a silly, blind old mouse. Three mice, and one of them dead, and another with them as good as dead, and I was left.
All the evidence and everything. Wasn't like Dick to do a thing like that.
You don't think he killed him?
Arthur, do you remember, it was a long time ago, you asked me what I expected to get out of it? If Sam and Dick squeezed you out of the firm.
Yeah, I remember.
And you said you might have a better proposition?
Yeah.
Well, I've decided what I want.
Sure. You really want to be a vice president. We can fix that easy enough, although I sort of had the idea that you'd be pulling out after a while now that we're married.
Oh, you're priceless. No, I'm afraid a vice presidency isn't at all what I have in mind, and I don't know where you got the idea that I'd be pulling out of the firm, ever.
All right. What do you want?
I want a full partnership, Arthur.
A partnership?
Yes. Is that so strange?
Well, we are partners now, in a way. You're my wife.
No. I mean a real partnership. A corporate partnership.
Look, Helen, you're asking me out of a clear sky to give you a half a share in a $1 million business.
Yes.
Well, that'll take some thinking about.
Yes. I suppose it will. I was saying, it was strange about that evidence. For instance, there was the letter.
What letter?
The letter that was on Sam's desk when he killed himself. It disappeared.
You must be crazy.
Am I? What about the wristwatch? When he died, it said 5 after 8. But when they found him, it said 10 after 7. And the gun. It was lying on the carpet by his hand, but somehow it got into Dick's wall safe.
You knew all that, and you let an innocent man go to the chair?
Oh, really? Oh, Arthur, you are priceless. I let an innocent man go to the chair?
You know, of course, that a wife can't testify against her husband.
Oh, no. No, a wife can't be forced to testify against her husband, but she can if her conscience...
All right. What do you want?
I thought I'd mentioned it. The partnership.
I see.
Now you're not going to be unreasonable about it, are you, darling?
No, Helen. I'm not going to be unreasonable.
You know, darling, I was thinking. We ought to rearrange the office space.
She'd even turned her back on me now.
We can knock out those partitions.
She was gazing out of the window, dreaming up the future. Her future, just the way she'd planned it. I couldn't guess how she knew. She must have been hiding somewhere and seen me, but that didn't matter much now. I only knew that I was right back where I'd started from, the business slipping out of my hands, and someday, no business, and no Helen. I had to think fast and act fast. There was a bronze statuette on the end table. I picked it up and hefted it. It was just about right. So I stepped over behind her.
Of course, the officers then will be just exactly the same. Except for that. Darling, you won't mind that, will you?
I hit her hard, but not too hard, because this was one suicide that was going to come off right. I carried her out to the kitchen and propped her up in a chair in front of the kitchen table. And then I went into the bathroom and got some towels. That wouldn't leave any marks. And I tied her hands and feet and gagged her, so that even if she did come to in a few minutes, it wouldn't matter. All I had to do was come back in a couple of hours and put the towels away and make everything look just as natural as I could. It was a risk, those 2 hours, and I knew it. The whole thing was a risk. But it was the best I could do. I looked at her once more before I left. She hadn't moved a muscle. And then I turned on the gas. By the time I got back to my apartment, I was shaking all over. This time I had really killed somebody. But why would anybody connect me with it, I told myself. Why would anybody think it was anything but suicide? She had the motive this day of all days. Everybody knew that she was in love with Walsh. And even if her marriage to me came out, the motive would still hold. And then the doorbell rang. I jumped a foot. At first I wasn't going to answer it, and then I thought I'd better. Whoever it was would establish that I was here at home and that I could brush them off before I had to leave.
Hello, Mr. Lockwood. Busy?
Why, no, Captain Gibbons. No, no, come right in.
Thanks.
Right in here for you. Have a seat.
Uh-huh.
Cigar?
Thanks. Oh, pretty good cigar. You must be doing pretty well for yourself nowadays. better let me light it myself. You, seem kind of nervous.
Well, you know how it is. I mean, today the...
Oh, you mean your partner Walsh going to the hot seat?
I try not to think about it, but, well...
Yeah, he'll be sitting down there pretty soon now. Pretty soon. They say it doesn't hurt. Well, I don't know. Do you ever see one?
Look, do we have to talk about it?
Makes you feel kind of bad, eh? I wouldn't wonder. Why did you do it, Lockwood?
Do what?
Frame him.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Sure you do. You changed the time, stashed the gun, tore up the suicide note. In fact, as I was saying, you framed him.
No, Walsh killed him. You know he did. He was convicted of killing him. All the evidence was that he killed him.
Oh, sure. Walsh killed him, all right.
What?
Walsh killed him. He told us he did. Just today.
But it was... Hey, look, what is this?
Walsh killed him and framed it to look like suicide. Then you came along and pinned it back on Walsh where it belonged in the first place. He gave us a full confession just this afternoon.
Then you...
So, I don't know whether we ought to thank you for making it easy for us or try to pin a rap on you. But the DA's willing to let it go, so it's all right with me. He, wants a statement, though.
Oh, sure. Sure, anything you say.
By the way, what about that dame?
What dame?
The one in your office that was supposed to be sweet on Walsh. We want her the worst way.
You... Why?
Accessory to murder. She was in it up to her ears. Yeah.
So that was
Walsh
it.
Spilled the whole thing.
That's how she'd known, and I'd taken my life in my hand for nothing. She was up there dying right now. I was murdering her while Gibbons sat there risking my life to do something that the law would have done for me. Maybe it still wasn't too late, but Gibbons just sat there talking and talking and talking.
Well, you just go down there to the DA's office and give him that statement, eh?
Sure, sure. Tomorrow, the very first thing.
You know, you sure are a heel, Lockwood. But you're a lucky heel.
It was 10 blocks away. I didn't dare take a cab. I didn't dare even run for fear that somebody would see me and remember in case it was too late. And by the time I got there, I was gasping for breath, so I'd run every step. So I let myself in. The smell of gas hit me just like a brick wall. I put my handkerchief over my face and rushed into the kitchen. I threw open the window, shut off the gas. She was sitting there just as I left her. Well, I got her up on the table, and I dragged it over toward the window. I got the gag out of her mouth, and I began working her arms. Artificial respiration. I knew that much. I worked over her by that window until the sweat was running down my face. But I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell yet. The towels that I'd tied her feet with were still there, but I didn't bother with them or anything else. I just kept working over, up and down, as though... Yes, as though my life depended on it. It did.
I'm afraid you're too late, Lockwood. I'm afraid your wife is dead.
He was a smart cop, that Gibbons. He knew a lot. He says now he's pretty sure it doesn't hurt. The electric chair, I mean. Well, tonight I'm going to find out.
In search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.